is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Scott Nagy, head men's basketball coach at Wright State University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host. What time is it? Well, it's 12:29, but not AM. 12:29 on Wednesday. We've been experiencing some technical difficulties. Plus, I've been on vacation.
Gallivanting around the USA.
Yeah, and now I'm actually back at work, so it's all these different things going on at once. My internet didn't work last night. Your desktop computer didn't cooperate today. We've been missing and gone, but anyway, we're back, baby.
And yeah, we're back. Just a caveat, if you hear any children in the background of my podcast, they are upstairs. They are not, only one is sleeping right now, so we might have some special pop-ins, Mike. I don't know.
We might hear some construction work going on here at my school, so we might get all kinds of different noises. The only thing we won't hear is my dog.
Have we ever recorded during the day, Mike? Like, I know you have a few times, but like, have we, you and I, ever done a podcast during the day?
No, we have not.
When people are awake.
Not, so.
No.
No.
So just stick around to the end of this podcast. You might get a special surprise at the end.
It's going to be an adventure.
All right. So we don't really, I thought, Mike, that we've cornered the market on like the NBA being a 365 day a year situation, but there's not a lot to talk about today, Mike. You agree with that?
There's not any real news, right? Everything we're going to talk about today is pretty much smoke and mirrors right now is really speculation. Yep. And just trying to react to things that have been said, but not actually anything that's being done. So this is a more theoretical podcast than it is an actual reaction to things that have happened. I guess the one real thing that's happened
there are clowns everywhere?
There are clowns everywhere. But the real thing that has happened is Kevin Durant has issued his ultimatum to the Nets. Either you fire GM Sean Marks and coach Steve Nash, who presumably, at least on the Nash side, was, I have to assume, either hand-picked or heartily endorsed by Kevin Durant when he was hired.
He was literally said at the exit interviews in June that he with the press, he said that he likes Steve Nash and he soaks up information and Steve Nash like a sponge. It's great spending time with him. So like, what has changed? Like I don't get it. Listen, this whole thing is going to go down as one of the worst things teams put together in NBA history. We got James Harden, who wore a fat suit to get there. We've got Kevin Durant, who shows up injured, doesn't play for a year, plays for two, they were pretty solid. Okay. But doesn't really amount to anything. We got Kyrie Irving, who's off doing whatever he's doing, doesn't get a vaccine, can't play home games, doing Kyrie things. He's a weird dude, as we said in this podcast. This has got to be the worst put-together team and one of the worst situations ever. It's almost ironic that it's Brooklyn, because the other time I can think of that it was this bad was when they traded all their assets for Garnett and Pierce, and that didn't go well either. So this is worse, though, because you've got it's been more of a clown show. But at the same time, it's just like, God, like, can you think of another time it's this been this bad, Mike?
Not when you factor in what the expectations were, or potentially when those three guys were on the court for all of 16 games over the course of 3 years, what their offense looked like. As we've said many times, one of my favorite phrases is the theoretical. And so theoretical Rodney Hood got that started, but the theoretical Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie, KD, and Harden, pretty good team, but the theoretical Brooklyn Nets don't really exist. They never came to fruition. So when you look at this three-year run that Brooklyn has put together, it's really, when you compare it to what the expectations were, and I guess continue to be pretty much throughout, even last year going into the playoffs, there was thoughts that, okay, Kyrie's back and he's going to be able to play, and now all of a sudden Brooklyn's going to be a title favorite again, and then Boston swept them out of town in the first round. I think compared to the expectations, you have to say that it's probably one of the biggest catastrophes in the history of the league. And that says nothing about – that's just talking about what it's done to the franchise on the court. And now you talk about the off court. I don't know if it's damage, but look, if they end up – I think they're going to trade Durant for something at some point. Now, maybe it doesn't happen before the season. We'll talk a little about that in a second. But maybe it doesn't happen until January or February when you get to the trading deadline. But I don't think they're going to fire their GM and coach and keep Durant. But if they do, which I'm not ruling it out 100% despite what chairman of the board Joe Tsai said that
we support. What he tweeted.
We support our – I forget exactly how he phrased it, but something to the effect of we support our staff, or we support our team or our guys. Well, maybe our guys could end up being Durant, and maybe Nash and Marks aren't his guys. But regardless,
our front office and coaching staff have my support. We will make decisions in the best interest of the Brooklyn Nets.
So he did not specifically name those individuals. So maybe he's just referring to the position of GM and the position of coach. So when the new guys come in that Durant picks, they'll have his full and complete support. And what's in the best interest of the Brooklyn Nets is keeping –
I read that completely differently.
I read it that way. I'm just saying if it in fact goes that direction, which I don't think it will, but do you rule that out entirely that they fire those two guys and Durant is somehow back in the fold? I don't completely rule that out.
Listen, I want to just say this, Mike. The amount of buffoonery that the decision brought and things that LeBron has gotten heat for, and I'm not trying to be like a LeBron apologist here, but this is like 10 times worse, right? Like than the decision. This is like 10 times worse, right?
Yes, because the decision happened when LeBron was an unrestricted free agent. And so he, at that point, had the right to be able to go anywhere he wanted to go and play anywhere he wanted to play. Whereas this Durant situation, he already signed the contract extension. He has 4 years left on his current contract. And so to issue an ultimatum, I guess the counterpoint is he can issue whatever ultimatum he wants to issue. The Nets are under no obligation to acquiesce to his demands. They can just say, you're a Brooklyn Net. You want to sit out for the next 4 years? Have at it. Go ahead. Is Durant going to throw away 6 months, a year, a season, more than one season in order to get his way? Hard to say, hard to believe that he would do that. And obviously the Nets are then killing themselves as a franchise too. If you have on $200 million player who's one of the best players in the league sitting and not playing for you, it doesn't bode well for the product that you're going to be able to put on the floor. But that's where we are in terms of the standoff. What do you do if you're each side? I think to me, the bigger question, and you can even take this question and parse it down to, is Durant this type of guy, or is Durant worth this type of headache? But it comes down to, if you're an NBA franchise, at what point or where do you draw the line of how good the player has to be? And maybe there's no line. Maybe the line is above any player for some franchises. Where do you draw that line for allowing a player to come in and have basically carte blanche over your organization and dictate to you what you're going to do and have such a huge influence on the types of personnel moves? There's not a huge track record of success for guys coming in and just running a franchise as a player.
Let's go there, Mike. I know this wasn't an intended discussion point, but who in the current NBA would you allow to do that?
I wouldn't allow anybody.
Okay.
My answer would be no one.
Okay.
Because I think as a franchise, you have lots and lots of people in your front office who you are paying lots and lots of money to scout, to figure out what your team needs to look like, to understand the salary cap ramifications, all the things that anybody who's in a front office tries to do, right? That's their job, is to try to put together the best team that they possibly can. And if you look back over the history of the league, and especially when it comes to picking players, now you can maybe make an argument that allowing the player to have a pretty big degree of input into who your coach is makes some sense. Because in the NBA, when a player and a coach relationship goes bad, that's usually not good for the team, not good for the franchise. On the other hand, if you have a good working relationship between a player and a coach, that tends to lead to the potential for more success because the player and coach get along and it just everybody's going in the same direction. But as far as player personnel and picking friends and deciding who my seventh, eighth, ninth man is, and signing DeAndre Jordan, or if you're KD looking at it and going, oh, I'd really like to play with Kyrie, without really understanding and looking at Kyrie's history and kind of what he's been in the various stops that he's had along the way since he left the Cavs, to me, I just think you're making a mistake if you let players determine who should be on your roster, because players don't care. LeBron, over the course of his career, right, he hasn't really cared about the long term. He wants to win this season. And that caused, at least in that first realm, in his first tour of duty with the Cavs made lots of win now moves that didn't really pan out and didn't help the win.
I don't put the first round of LeBron, I don't put that as his feet as far as him making moves.
I agree. He couldn't
pull anyone in. Like, he tried to get people to come here and they didn't.
Right.
So I don't put that. You can make that argument, but at the same time, my thing is I probably leave LeBron's the only person I would, because it pretty much guarantees you're going to win at least one championship. Right? Earlier
in his career,
Now probably not. Okay, I get it. You know, I get that. Probably, but he'd probably be the only person, because, like, I mean, maybe you could argue Steph, but Steph's not that kind of personality, so I don't think he's going to do it anyways. Everyone else, I mean, heck, I wouldn't trust Jordan to put a team together.
No, he was terrible. He wanted all his North Carolina guys, right?
Yeah.
There were all kinds of stories that at one point he wanted Walter Davis. I can't remember. There was another guy. Well, that he
but
really
just look
wanted
at his results as the owner. I mean,
right.
It's been terrible. So, Anyways, all right, I'm pretty much on the same page with you, Mike. I wouldn't let anyone, you know, maybe LeBron, peak LeBron, which, like I said, it guaranteed you a championship. You know,
right, because the counter argument is that you don't have a chance to win a championship unless you have one of those guys.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know how far down the list you want to go in terms of, I'm not talking about specific names, but once you get past about guys 7 or 8, I think your odds of winning a championship are pretty
What about Kawhi, Mike? Would you like Kawhi? No, because of what you've seen what happened with Paul George? No, right?
Absolutely not. It's just, I don't think any player, look, like I said earlier, front office people are being paid lots and lots of money and spending unbelievable amounts of time and energy. And you think about all the analytics and everything that goes into an NBA front office. And those are the people who are spending all the time who you want them to be making those decisions. Now, that doesn't say, again, a guy who has who is on the level of KD or LeBron or Steph, should they have some input? Should you be able to have conversations with them about, hey, we're thinking about this guy or we're thinking about that guy? Absolutely. But I think ultimately when the player issues an ultimatum of you have to do this or I'm not going to play or I don't want to be here anymore or you have to trade me unless you do this, I think you're in a really, really dangerous spot. And I get the value of a Kevin Durant or a LeBron or anybody else who's a top five player in the league who makes those kinds of statements or those kinds of requests. But I think for the long-term viability of your franchise and for ultimately for the success of that player, I just don't think there's a long track record of guys coming in and having that huge influence over the franchise where it ends up turning out really well.
I agree, Mike. I just wanted your opinion. So thank you for sharing it.
Absolutely.
All right. So then the only other thing we wanted to talk about was before doing a quick prediction based on where things are now is the meeting that LeBron, Rich Paul, Rob Pelinka, and I think Buss was there too, to discuss LeBron's future in LA and what that would look like. He's obviously at this point, I believe it was last week, he was able to sign an extension. He hasn't done so yet. I don't envision him signing an extension. I don't know why he would extend right now. You're relying on Russell Westbrook? I mean, come on now. AD's body? No. So I think basically what LeBron probably told them was, I'm not signing an extension. I'm waiting. I want to see what my options are after this year. I want to see how we do this year. That's my guess. And, you know, I really miss having the Simmons podcast, Mike, because I've been really listening to NBA stuff. I really haven't heard if anything else has come out about said meeting, but I would envision nothing else really has. That was probably the general gist was they were just talking about his future in LA. Have you any thoughts about this meeting?
The talks went well, right? That was the report that came out that the talks went well. I think this is tied into our first topic because, as you said, why would LeBron at this point sign an extension when Russell Westbrook is still on the Los Angeles Lakers? And I think it's been, I don't know if proven is the right word, but certainly there is a pretty strong indication that AD is not going to supersede LeBron or accept the mantle from LeBron to become the guy, and LeBron slides down into second fiddle, which, as we've said many, many times, LeBron's not going to allow that to happen, number one, but I don't think AD is in a position to become the guy who's going to lead that team to an NBA title with LeBron and a supporting cast. I just don't see that happening. So to go back to the Durant talks, right, if the biggest rumor or the biggest aspect of that you hear when you talk about where could Kyrie end up, most of the franchises in the league have no interest whatsoever in adding Kyrie Irving to their roster mix. But the Los Angeles Lakers do, because that would enable them to theoretically dump Russell Westbrook and bring in a player who, when he's playing and when he's on the court, is a much better fit, a much more natural fit next to LeBron. They've already played together, despite the fact that Kyrie clearly wanted out of LeBron's shadow when he was in Cleveland, which is a whole other thing that hasn't really been talked about or discussed. But let's just say that LeBron looks at it and says, okay, if we can jettison Russell Westbrook and we can bring Kyrie Irving back into the fold, now we have a big three of LeBron, Kyrie, AD. If those three guys are all at their best and you can find 3, 4, 5 role players, then maybe you have something. So until something like that were to happen, I don't see him signing an extension.
Mike,
prior.
I think what you're really saying is, I think that's what you're saying, right? Right, Mike? That's what you're saying?
I don't know. I think, look, we talked about it a little bit before. Is it completely crazy that he could come back to Cleveland again? I don't think it's completely crazy. It's not crazy because, one,
he's done it before.
He's done it before. He's from here. And if he overcame the Comic Sans letter and the ill feelings that he had toward Dan Gilbert to come back the first time, then coming back a third time doesn't seem crazy. If you look at the basketball situation and you look at what the Cavs cap sheet is going to look like next summer, they're going to have, I think, depending upon what they do with LeVert and Sexton, they could have up to like $28 million in salary cap space next year, where they could theoretically keep their three main guys, sign LeBron as a free agent, and now you add LeBron to the Garland, Allen, Mobley mix. And depending upon where LeBron is in terms of his aging process, is that team good enough to make some noise as an NBA title contender? I mean, there's going to have to be some continued improvement from Garland, and Mobley's going to have to take a leap in order for that to happen, which I don't think is completely out of the question. So it's not insane because of what pieces the Cavs have put in place already, and the fact that they're not going to have to trade anything in order to get him. If he doesn't sign an extension and he just becomes an unrestricted free agent, then the Cavs can just outright sign him. We also have the Bronny piece of it, which who knows how that plays itself out and whether a team would draft Bronny just so they could potentially get LeBron. So there's a lot of things going on, but I do agree with you that I don't think he signs the extension, with the caveat that maybe if something breaks with the Durant, Kyrie, and somehow Kyrie ends up in Los Angeles, that maybe then he looks at it and says, okay, this has kind of become my home and I'm going to sign the extension at this point because we have three guys who, when they're at their best, are probably three of the top, whatever, 10, 15 players in the league when they're at their best, which is not very often. But that's a lot of stuff that has to go correctly. And that's still assuming the fact that the Nets or some other team, if it's a multi-team trade, is going to want to take on Russell Westbrook and his contract, which I'm not sure that anybody really wants to do. So I think the odds of him ending up in Cleveland are not super high. But at the same time,
what would you say? What's your percent, Mike? You know, let's throw it back two summers, Mike. The percentage the NBA is going to get through the COVID season, the bubble.
Okay. So we're going to do the LeBron to Cleveland percentages every week.
Maybe not every.
All right, okay. I'm going to put it at, let's see. I don't think it's more than 50-50. I'll put it at 40%. How about that?
I'll take it, Mike, because I was going to go like 35%. Okay. So I'll take your 40%. I just think this Sexton thing is a huge red flag for me. Like, I know that we don't know how he would go with the team anyways, but the fact that, and you know, the fact that no one's going after him, you know, maybe that's an indicator too. Like, for me, there's no way Sexton's not going to just take the qualifying offer at this point and be an unrestricted free agent next year. And, you know, that could be a good situation for the Cavs because we're not going to have to, you know, pay him a bunch of money for a long-term plan for, like, do we know if he's going to work with this team? But at the same token, you know, what if it does work really well and we don't get him? Then we're really putting all our eggs in a basket to not necessarily LeBron, get someone else to replace him. So I don't think Sexton's going anywhere else. I think he's going to accept that qualifying offer, right? Like, at this point?
I don't know. It's really – I'm not sure what he's going to do. I don't think – because here's how I look at it. One, the Cavs haven't offered Caris LeVert an extension either, and I believe he's – extension eligible, and so
this is what Winhurst was talking about, though. If the Cavs don't offer Sexton a big contract or they don't extend LeVert, they're playing the LeBron game. That's what he said, you know, way back when.
Like, which, in a lot of ways, they'd be silly to not at least be considering that and thinking about it and monitoring and trying to figure out what that looks like. So the Sexton part of it is super interesting, right? Because he could play on the qualifying offer, which I think is, what, $7.2 million or something for 1 year. I believe that's what it is. And at that number, he's clearly underpaid based on his last previous healthy season. Now, he missed all but, whatever, six games or eight games or whenever he got hurt at the beginning of last season. The contract that they offered him, I think, was, what, 3 years, $40 million as a long-term contract. And that contract still would, I think, allow them to have like $23 million or something under the cap where they could still potentially be able to sign LeBron. So they haven't hamstrung themselves, even with the offer that they have out there on the table. The question is, if you're Sexton, do you want to take that where you're probably going to be underpaid for the duration of that contract? You don't know what your role is on this team. Clearly, I think his days with the Cavs, at least as they're currently constructed, he's not going to have another season where he averages 24 points a game with this team. It would be hard to imagine that there'd be enough minutes for him and enough opportunities with the ball to be able to do that. So I don't know if he'd be building his value. It's just a case of he's coming off a year where he barely played. And I know it's not a completely traumatic knee injury with the strained MCL or exactly what that, you know, he didn't tear his ACL, but yet he was still out the entire season. So is there any value in that long-term security for Sexton? Does he swallow his pride and sign that three-year extension? I don't know the answer to that. I think it's probably more likely. It seems more likely every day that he's going to just play on that qualifying offer. It's interesting, as you said, that nobody else has put an offer sheet out there, which you could say from the Cavs standpoint, yeah, we don't want to offer him a long-term contract because we don't want to hamstring ourselves. But yet at the same time, it seems like if he had value out there in the league, that I know there's not a ton of teams that have cap space, but nobody's beaten down his door to offer him more money than what the Cavs are offering. And you so often hear when you're listening to podcasts or you read that people say, well, they're overpaying for this guy. And, you know, who are they bidding against? They're not bidding against anybody. Well, in this case, clearly the Cavs aren't bidding against anybody. So why do you want to offer a huge contract? The other side of that is the player, even though nobody else is offering him more, the player can still feel insulted and still feel like, hey, I don't want to sign that contract. I'm just going to take the qualifying offer and bet on myself. And so I think that the Cavs would be happy if he signed that three-year extension because they'd obviously hope that he would outperform that contract. But I don't think they'll be completely distraught if he ends up playing on the qualifying offer. And I think they're going to do the same thing with LeVert. I think you just see how the year goes. You see whether LeVert can stay healthy. You see how he fits in. You're also going to get a longer look at Agbaji and to see if he's going to be a better fit. You're going to see, has Okoro improved his offense? And really, you have, it's almost four guys competing. I know it's not all for the same position, and there's opportunities for all those guys in different roles, but I think those four guys, you're looking at maybe which two of them or which one of them is going to be a part of the long-term future, or which guys could you potentially let go in free agency or package into a deal if you get them signed.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. I know we're pushing up against
We are. We got about four minutes Mike, before I got to jump off and get back to work.
So we're going to do real quick, early, before anything even starts, predictions. If we had to right now say, who's the best team in the East and who's the best team in the West? I'm going to go first.
Okay, go for it.
I think it's the Bucks, and I think it's the Warriors. I'm staking my claim. I'm keeping the Warriors there. I'm keeping the Bucks there. Just because there's too many other unknowns, and I don't trust Phoenix in the postseason. The end.
Okay. So I'll say Milwaukee, I think, is going to be the best team in the East. And we could caveat all this with if they stay healthy, but you could say that for every single team that we're going to talk about. So it doesn't really matter. So I'm going to say Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee, to me, when I look at all these teams at their best, I just think Milwaukee. Milwaukee's better than Boston. You put Chris Middleton back in that lineup, I think Milwaukee is better than Boston. So Give me the Bucks at the top. I think it's the Bucks and Celtics, and then I think there's a drop off. A lot of people have Philly up there near the top. I'm not buying it. You're relying on too much on James Harden and whatever. You hear the reports that he's getting himself in shape and this and that, whatever. It's not, sorry, Philadelphia. It's not happening. You're not cracking into the NBA finals with that team you have. And I don't think Miami is the way they're constituted. That those are the top four teams that you see most often being mentioned. And I think Boston, Milwaukee are in a class by themselves. And then maybe if you want to have a tier of Miami and Philadelphia as regular season teams, fine. And then you get into the Cavs, Raptors, Hawks, Bulls. I think those are the next four teams probably. And then you're down at the bottom where you got some interesting teams like Orlando and Detroit with the draft picks and the players that they brought in. I think it's, you know, those teams are going to be interesting to watch. The bad teams at the bottom of the East are going to be interesting to watch, but I think it's the Bucks. And then out West, it's not as clear cut for me out West. I do think that Golden State is probably going to be right there as long as they, again, stay healthy. But, you know, you look at the rest of those teams. Phoenix, there has to be some carryover from what happened to them against Dallas in Game 7. I just don't know they're going to be the same. Chris Paul is a year older. You got the Ayton situation where I know it's kind of theoretically resolved, but it could be resolved with some resentment there. So I don't see Phoenix being a team that gets there. Dallas was obviously weakened by the departure of Brunson, and then they really didn't do much to add anything. I guess what you're counting on if you're the Mavericks is that lots of reports that, just like Harden, that Luka's in the best shape of his career. And so
that's not really hard to say after what he came into
like. But if he comes in and he's right and he gets himself together, I still just don't think they did enough around him for me to be able to elevate Dallas to the status of, hey, they're going to win the West. And then I think the only other team that you really can consider to me is Denver, because if you bring back a healthy Jamal Murray and you bring back a healthy Michael Porter, I think that team combined with Jokic, Aaron Gordon, some of the other moves they've made around the fringes by bringing in Caldwell Pope, I do think that if Denver's right, that there's a good chance that Denver could be the Western Conference representative. And then you have the Clippers. Who knows? Kawhi, who knows what you're getting? Hasn't played for 16 months, 17 months, something like that. Paul George's health is always kind of a question mark. So I think, to me, those three teams, the Warriors, Clippers, and Nuggets, I know I've been kind of a Nuggets stan on this podcast, so I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to say Denver and Milwaukee are my way too early NBA Finals predictions.
All right. I have one. I know the segment's coming back soon, Mike, the Browns segment. So this is my 1 minute Browns question, and then I know you need to go.
Yep, sure.
Does Deshaun Watson, the over under is one game. Does Deshaun Watson play one game this season? Over under.
It seems like the process is rigged, right?
100%.
That he's not going to play. I think that's the way you have to look at it right now if you're an NFL fan, a Browns fan, because you appoint a theoretically neutral party to adjudicate this. She comes back with a 6-game suspension. The NFLPA says, we're not going to appeal it. The NFL says, oh, we're going to appeal it. And I guess the only thing you can say is they tried to make it, or they're trying to make it look like it's not rigged by not having Goodell be the guy who rules on it, which he could have been according to the letter of the law and the collective bargaining agreement. So instead they appoint, I forget what's the guy, a judge or a former attorney general or something.
Former attorney general of New Jersey. I don't remember his name, but yeah.
Okay, there you go. So anyway, so they appoint him, who I'm assuming at this point, he's just a figurehead for the NFL. And so it's hard to fathom that an appeal made by the NFL that is going to be ruled upon by an NFL-appointed attorney general, I just don't see where. It's not like the union had any say in who that person was. So I think it's inevitable that he's going to be suspended for the entire season and play less than one game. That would be my take on it.
Yep.
And that may be deserved. That might not even be enough of a punishment for what he's done. I don't know. You can read into it a million different ways,
But I don't think that a year based on everything that's gone down, I'm not sure that that's unreasonable.
Okay, so I have one more question for you, Mike, and then we're ending the podcast.
Okay.
Do you wish Baker Mayfield was still your quarterback this year?
No.
Oh, my God. Come on now.
No.
So you think we're better off with Jacoby Brissett than one more year of Baker?
Well, one more year of Baker, and then what?
I'd still rather have Baker.
Okay, I mean, I guess I would say one more year of Jacoby Brissett, and then I get 27-year-old Deshaun Watson, who I guess won't have played football for
3 years.
Three seasons at that point. I'm not sure what you're getting there, but I know our team would have had to be historically good on the defensive side of the ball in order to win a Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield. That's all. That's what I know. Baker Mayfield was not taking this team to a Super Bowl based on his capabilities as a quarterback. You would have won in spite of Baker Mayfield, not because of Baker Mayfield. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Just remember that week one, buddy.
I understand. Well, look, he may come out and torch the Browns, which is fine. He may very well torch the Browns that first week. But
all right. We're gonna end the podcast there. Mike, I appreciate you doing this in the middle of the day today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your professional development today.
I will, believe me. I'm going to go back over and see if I can still grab a lunch before the festivities begin. So to everyone out there, thanks for listening again. Great to be back from vacation. I think we're going to probably have one more rebroadcasted episode that will go out tomorrow night, Thursday night, and into Friday. I haven't decided which one that will be. And then we will be back with our regular interview episodes, and we've got an upcoming roundtable. So be on the lookout for that. Good to be back in town. Glad to be back behind the mic. Glad to be back with Jay. And thanks for listening. We will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.